and power supply systems. As an example, power requirements have been increased from 4 to 9 megawatts. The contract with joint stock company Strabag started in 1915. At that time, the contract estimation was 3.6 billion rubles. Currently, it is about 7 billion rubles. And nevertheless, if you look at the photo of the construction site taken last winter and compare it with the previous slide, you should notice significant progress over the year. During the current year, even before the full end of the construction, some parts of building will be ready to install the equipment. For instance, a large bridge crane with a lifting capacity of 80 tons located in the MPD building has already been put into operation. This allows us to begin the installation of detector components very soon. This slide shows process of first shipping parts of the MPD magnet into the building. As for the NICA Innovation Center, the Institute of Unique Construction Arena continues designing. In addition to the main contract, there are two agreements which shift the deadline for submission of design documentation until September 2020. The main reason for such delays was the necessity to bring the concept of the building in line with financing plans. Next picture shows the compressor station under construction. This building is of key importance to complete the cryogenic complex. All equipment for this building has been already manufactured, delivered to the lab, and waits for being installed in their places. In November 2017, we entered into contract with company PSG, and construction of the building was started. But after 1 year, process was stopped and contract was broken. The selected company came into being financially disability. A new tender selected another contractor, Stroytech Invest Company. The deadline to complete the facility in accordance with the contract was January 2020. But as you can see from the picture, this deadline is not realized. 2 months ago, Joint Institute received this letter indicating that the real completion will be no earlier than July. Nevertheless, there is already the second letter, which gives a new deadline, September. For this predictable setback, the reason is that selected company had no experience in industrial construction, in its understanding of the task was not enough even to make the feasible plan. It is very unwise that decision to involve this company was made in contrary to the opinion of leading engineers and construction specialists of our institute, because of the lowest cost only. At the moment, it's very difficult to predict completion dates to start up this compressor equipment. The next item of my talk is upgrading the plants to produce liquid helium and nitrogen. As you remember, the NICA cryogenics will be based on liquid helium plant built earlier for the nucleotron. For the NICA complex, the total refrigerator capacity will be increased from existing 4 to 10 kilowatts at liquid helium temperature. It will be possible to reach using the new helium liquefier with capacity of about 1,000 liters per hour, which is already in operation, and three so-called satellite refrigerators with capacity of 2 kilowatts each. These refrigerators operate using liquid helium obtained from the central liquefier, and they are highly reliable because there is no need such very fast moving parts as expansion turbines. The new cryogenic equipment will be placed in 4 locations. Building 1B at the central cryogenic plant, in the compressor building under construction, in building 17 of the collider, and outside of the buildings. Green color units in the picture are the equipment already delivered or ready to be transported from the producer factories. Red color indicates the units whose production will be completed in this year. For the central cryogenic plant, we have already got following elements. Helium liquefier, satellite refrigerator for the booster synchrotron, 4 draining and oil purification units, nitrogen liquefier with capacity of 1.3 ton per hour, and nitrogen ray condenser. For the new compressor station, there will be 2 new helium screw compressors with capacity of 6.6 thousand normal cubic meter per hour each, and 3 nitrogen turbocompressors with unit capacity of about 10,000 normal cubic per hour. For the cryogenic plant in building 17, we have already got 2 satellite refrigerators for the collider and nitrogen recondenser with capacity of 0.5 ton per hour. Now, installation of cryogenic equipment is being only in building 1B, because the buildings of the compressor station and building 17 are not yet ready. The first satellite refrigerators for the booster has been delivered last year. It consists of a control system, purification block, cooling and liquefaction units. Now this refrigerator is being installed. Here you can see the picture for installation process. Next photo shows 7 of 21 components of 1,000 cubic meter helium gas holder before installation. For the NICA superconducting magnet, 100 watt helium refrigerator has been designed and constructed by a company in Dresden, Luft and Kältetechnik. Cold test of it in delivery to Dubna were completed in last year. Let's now talk about power supply systems. The existing power supply scheme of our institute is shown in this picture. There are 2 independent 20 kilometer lines of 110 kilovolts from Tempe to Dubna. At the Joint Institute site, we have 2 main transformer stations. Now, the total power is 52 megawatt. But 28 megawatt are intended for the city users, and there are only 42 for Joint Institute. Of course, it won't be enough in future, and the next slide illustrates the development plans. After their realization, the total power for Joint Institute will be increased by 28 megawatt. The required capacity of main station 1 will be provided by 2 new transformers manufactured by Siemens Transformer in Voronezh. The design work to reconstruct this station is performed by Kostroma branch of Joint Stock Company Elektrocentra Montaj. At present, all documentation has been delivered for being approved at Joint Institute, and we have planned by the spring of this year choose a general contractor to install the equipment. The reconstruction is scheduled to be completed in 2020. This page reminds you estimated power distribution of the main transformer station 1 after startup of the NECA complex. The most important units which will be need additional power are booster, collider and new compressor hall. For the NECA requirements, all the main internal electrical systems of the lab are being upgraded now. In this slide you can see the already reconstructed substation. Substation 13, it is source of electric current for the nucleotron magnets and will be one of the main centers of electricity for collider, MPD and SPD. Substation 42 provides power supply for the test facility superconducting magnets. Substation 11 will be used for the electron cooling system of the booster. Substation K will provide power supply for the beam extraction line from the nucleotron. Three more substations are object to be upgraded in near future. Five more units will be constructed inside building 17. The task of substation 15 is supply energy to collider and building 205. Substation 12 will provide power to the nucleotron and booster. Substation 21 is biggest with capacity 40 megawatts. This substation will be divided into parts for the compressors and power supply of the accelerator complex. The both parts will have independent input lines from the main transformer station 1. All required documentation has been developed and approved at all authorities. First of all, in Russian agency Rostechnadzor. At final item, some words about thermal grids and pipelines. The heat load of the new buildings will be about 11 gigacalories. In other words, the total load from our lab will be doubled. After recent modernization, the Eastern Thermal Station is completely ready to meet these requirements. Nevertheless, there was still some problems with external thermal grids. In this picture, the old pipelines of heating from the thermal grid station marked in red. You can see that lab territory has only one input in the past. For the new buildings, it was necessary to make the second input and increase the main pipeline's diameter from point A to point B from 500 to 600 millimeter. Last summer, these reconstructions were completed. In photo to the left, you can see ready for operation heat metering unit inside and outside. It's located at the end of the new pipelines. That's all I have planned to say. As you can see from my information at the moment, we have some weak points related to the construction backlog. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Nikolai. For this report, I think we appreciate the openness of the report in presenting to us the various difficulties and delays that the project encounters along the line. Are there any hands, please?
Yeah, also thank you for this openness of the problems, but I'm shocked. I'm shocked that you have a procedure for getting contracts done where experts are not listened to, And at CERN, you would have even a lawyer participating who is checking whether you do things right. And somebody would be liable for this if you choose a wrong company who hasn't done it. The other part is I'm surprised that the real estate, the surface area, has increased by factor 2. And also that the power was underestimated. And my question there is, do you have at least also the power peak when ramping of the nuclear and the booster is happening? Are you covering the peak power requirements there? And last question, do you have 2-3 megawatts, 4 megawatts provided for the improvement of the computer facility in the future? Because computers are now using also quite some megawatts.
The last question about power for a computer. Yes, it will be planned. And the first question is very, very difficult for me. Maybe.
Okay, Vladimir, you will address
Hans,
some of
my questions. Maybe I could clarify some of your questions. First of all, power was properly estimated at the very beginning. It was not underestimated or something like that. It's initially we knew how much power we needed. So what he has presented, you could never see that something was underestimated. Concerning the building, indeed, the project with which we have started was gone through the state expertise in 2013. And contract was signed in 2015. Since 2013 till 2016, when we had signed the agreement with the state or the government to providing the sources for the NICA project. The project of the accelerator was essentially changed. It was not the same initial project, or it was just design report. And only the last state expertise of the design project was gone in 2018. And the price for 2018 project and 2013 project has a big difference. That's why the square meters we need more and the prices goes up. And now this is a problem which we should solve. Indeed, we have the lack of resources, mainly due to the changes of the civil construction area. This requirement for the needs of the accelerator and some detector, etc., etc.
But Vladimir, what about this project where the local experts say this company is not reliable, they don't have the expertise, but nevertheless it was chosen because they offer the lowest price?
The procurement system in Joint Institute.
But now when they are faced with the fact that there was a flaw there, what do you say to these procurement people? Eh? To this question? Igor, to this question?
Short comment to question of Hans about power consumption. We will use this a bit complicated scheme of working nucleotron and booster in different phases with energy recovering and so on and so forth. So not so strong problem.
Procurement issue is a big, big problem. Because I would say my opinion, because the system was not properly adopted for such a huge project. And adaptations came too slowly, unfortunately. But this is what is it.
Mm-hmm. Luciano.
Yeah. So I wanted to actually make a comment and ask a question. So the comment is that many organizations actually have also an adjudication scheme where contracts are adjudicated to the best bid, meaning the lowest offer. However, typically this is preceded by a market survey which qualifies companies that have demonstrated reliability and experience to undertake, supplies which are being offered. So I think that is the way to protect an organization against companies which clearly do not have the sufficient experience and resources to fulfill a contract of this size. Now my question is, now past is past, but to avoid further delays, what are the means that you have in order to put the pressure on the company to not further delay this construction work? In particular, I don't know whether the contract allows the application of penalties for late delivery.
Application of penalty could have saved probably a little bit money, but doesn't help in construction. In this particular case, with this, because between the project management and the procurement office, always a fight, you know. But nevertheless, we succeeded to provide some part of responsibility to the company which will be responsible for the installation of cryogenic with some extra funding, and that we hope will go more or less better, but still delays unavoidable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just to make it clear, I was not indicating penalties as a way of compensating for the delays, but more as a main to be used in a very delicate manner to put the pressure.
Yes, this is always indicated in any contract, the penalty for the delay, but we are trying to use it as much as possible, but life is not so simple, you know.
Yeah, an additional very small question. You mentioned that as a result of the changes in the design of the collider, the price increased to 7 billion rubles. What was the original price?
3.6 billion.
How much?
3.6.
So you doubled the price almost?
Yes, double area.
No, the area went from 20 to 30,000, so it's 1.5.
But power energy more than doubled.
Okay. So practically it went up by almost a factor of 2.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions or comments? Okay, again, I think we thank you for the openness in your report, and we appreciate that. Thank you. We now have the report from the status of the MPD project by spokesperson Adam Kizil.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Program Advisory Committee. I will present the status of the MPD project. As you all know, the main goal of our project is to study the physics of the QCD phase diagram in the area which is not yet particularly well studied of the place in the phase diagram where we expect the first order phase transition. We would like to see evidence for this phase transition. We would look for the conjecture critical point in this phase diagram. And as you can see from this brief sketch, this is the region which is actually best suited or will be best studied by the experiment MPD at NICA. And recently there is, as was already mentioned today, an explosion of new activities into so-called multi-messenger astronomies. One of the main parts of this studies is the extensive study of neutron stars. And as we hear more and more at conferences of heavy ion collision physics, this physics has very direct and intimate connection to the study that is expected to be done in NICA, especially if you look at the mergers of neutron stars. It turns out from the recent modeling that the matter which appears in such mergers would actually exhibit properties of relatively modest temperature and very large baryon density, which will be exactly the region which is studied by MPD. So we might have actually direct experimental laboratory way of studying such matter and have explicit input for our astrophysics colleagues. So in order to perform all those tasks, 2 years ago the MPD collaboration was formed, and this collaboration is organically growing. We already have now 38 institutes from 11 countries and more than 470 participants which have pledged their contribution to the collaboration. As you can see, a large part of the collaboration is coming from the Russian Federation. A similar amount of scientists come from China. There are significant contributions from Poland and Mexico. and then contributions from Armenia, Azerbaijan, Bulgaria, Chile, the Czech Republic, and Georgia. This collaboration is actually quite alive. It was already mentioned that the fourth collaboration meeting, which was coupled to the third instance of the NICA Days conference, have been held in Warsaw in November last year, October, and it was been hosted at the Center for Innovation and Technology Transfer of the Warsaw University of Technology with co-organizers of other institutes in Poland, had the patronage of the Minister of Science and Higher Education of Poland and the rector of our university, where we had more than 200 international participants, more than 70 submitted talks and a poster session, and I think we received feedback that this was a very well organized and very active conference, which was both the scientific and the technical part of MPD and NICA project has been discussed. We actually proceed as well with the formalization of the collaboration. So the stage that we are now is the signing of the Memoranda of Understanding. As much as we can, we use this opportunity to make higher the visibility of the MPD project. This is an example of the signing of the MOU with the Consortium of the Mexican Institutions in the Russian Federation Embassy in Mexico City. This is the signing of the Warsaw University of Technology memorandum in Warsaw. In total, we actually have, 13 memorandum of understanding already signed or in the final stages of the preparation. We are strongly pushing, especially our Russian Federation and Chinese colleagues to proceed with this signing, and that's actually going quite actively, large part due to help of our chairman, Itzhak Tseruya. We formed the bodies of the collaboration. One of them is the MPD Executive Council, which deals with the general issues of the collaboration. Some of the topics that are now under consideration by the EC is the IT tools and computing resources for the collaboration, and then reports for the major oversight committees, and a new item that will be finally decided on. It's already been discussed for quite some time, but will be finally decided on the upcoming collaboration meeting in April in the Joint Institute, is the establishment of the common fund for the collaboration. Now, for the computing of the NICA project, we are focusing on a two-way approach. One way is to actually use an extensive computing capabilities of the Laboratory of Information Technology, in particular the Governed Supercomputer and Hybrid Elite infrastructure. This infrastructure is heavily used. These are some examples of a current status of the Monte Carlo production for the nest needs of MPD. In particular, we are using the so-called Dirac interware, which is developed mainly at CERN. With this software, we should be able, or we are already able, to incorporate computing resources not only in the Joint Institute, but also in the outside institutions into a common computing infrastructure, which can be used for our Monte Carlo production. But equally importantly, there is a dedicated cluster just for NICA, which, as we already heard, has been recently officially opened at the Laboratory of High Energy Physics. This cluster has been, its upgrade has been finalized, and very recently its full capacity is available for us. It's about 5,000 job slots, up to 10 petabytes of additional disk space, which for now is divided into 5 plus 5 replica. There are negotiations ongoing on how these resources will be divided between several collaborations at NICA, but we are already very actively and very successfully using this computing infrastructure to provide significant amount of Monte Carlo production for our needs. Going to the other technical issues, of course, we would very much like to start as soon as possible the installation of our detector components. This, however, has to wait until the MPD hall is ready. And this is a very recent picture of how MPD hall looks like, and you can see from the outside it looks basically almost ready. You have already seen today pictures from the procedure to move the MPD magnet yoke parts, which have been sitting outside of the building for quite some time already. They are already moved inside the building. They are already stored in the MPD pit, so MPD pit is in some sense already fulfilling its purpose. There are also very extensive tests of the infrastructure inside the building. These are some example tests being done right now on the mechanical crane inside the pit. That is very important for us because we need all of those capabilities in order to proceed with the first procedure that will be done inside the pit, which is the assembly of the external magnet yoke. Once we have that, we will proceed, of course, with the construction of the detector components. And as you may know, we will begin, of course, with the so-called MPD stage one, which is composed of the magnet itself and the five major detectors: the time projection chamber, the time of flight, the electromagnetic calorimeter, and the two forward detectors, the fast forward detector and the forward hadronic calorimeter. With these combination detectors, we should achieve, first of all, excellent tracking capabilities with very good momentum resolution. That should allow us to perform basically the basic physics analysis. With the combination of the time, TPC and the time of flight, we should be able to achieve excellent particle identification. And so we want to construct this detector in order to start doing this physics. Basically, all the MPD systems are in production. The yoke, I will say a few words, but basically the outer yoke is just basically ready for installation. As soon as the pit is ready, it will be. We will start the assembly. The solenoid is again also produced and under tests now. The time of flight, all the elements for the barrel of the detector are ready. They are waiting for to be assembled, and the main drive now is to produce the readout chambers. The TOF systems are basically in a constant production, so we're just in the process of producing, mass producing of the modules. The electromagnetic calorimeter, maybe I'll say a few words later, and actually all of this is must be accompanied by the very intensive activities in the integration, and the critical part of this integration is actually the development of the carbon fiber support structure, which will go inside the magnet and where the electromagnetic calorimeter and all the other detectors will be attached to. So just some examples. This is how the production of the TPC is ongoing. And as you can see, we are now basically in the stage of producing the readout chambers. And in parallel, the assembly of the vessel of the TPC will actually happen very soon. All the parts, all the components that are needed for this assembly are already produced and here in Dubna. The time of flight, again, is fully produced here in Dubna. All the parts or all the materials needed for the construction of the detector have been purchased. And so far, about 25% of the detectors are constructed. That doesn't mean that 25% of modules have been produced. They are then assembled into modules. But we are quite confident that this detector should be ready for the general commissioning phase of the MPD. The electromagnetic calorimeter has been recently slightly redesigned to take into account the support structure that has been developed for it. And there, as a result, there is a slightly different number of modules, about 39,000. The technical specification for all the modules is basically ready. The production of the modules has already started in Russia. Now we have very recently received news from our Chinese collaborators, in some sense good and in some sense bad. First of all, the funding for the production of ECAL modules in China should be released within 1 or 2 months, which means that the production of the modules in China would start. What's maybe not so positive is that the amount of the money that is expected to be released is not exactly what we expected, so we might have to revisit a little bit our planning for the installation of the full ECO. Regardless, the plan for the installation, all the systems are basically designed, and we know how to proceed with the production of this detector. For the forward detectors, basically all the modules of the FHCAL are produced. So we just have to assemble them on site, and similar, the fast forward detector is also being prepared and should be ready for installation. So with this, we may provide you with the current our current understanding of what's the schedule of the construction of the detector. So I think you can already see from the pictures I've shown that it's realistic that on March 1st, the MPD hall will be ready for MPD works. That means that magnet yoke assembly will start right away. Solenoid is still ongoing testing in the company that's produced it. They are a little bit waiting for us because we need to actually assemble the yoke and provide them with the final measurements. And then they, if needed, they may do some modifications. Once this is done, the solenoid will be delivered to Dubna, and then we can assemble the full magnet system. Then we can, in parallel, first of all, proceed with the starting of the magnet and the measurements of the magnetic field, and the installation of the support frame. And with the support frame ready, we can then start putting in all the other subsystems, because they actually rely on the support frame to be inside the detector, because otherwise we don't have a way to attach them. That should allow us to start commissioning of the detector in 2021. Now, of course, all of this is one part of the activities of the collaboration. The other part is the preparation of the physics. The collaboration has decided that all the activities related to physics will be carried out in the so-called physics working groups. These working groups have been created. It's been reported at the last program advisory committee. We have five major working groups with conveners, globes, observables, spectra, light flavor, correlations, electromagnetic probes, and heavy flavor. I will now present some of the recent results that these working groups have provided, and I stress that even though some of the pictures that I'll be showing maybe look similar for you, because similar pictures have been shown in the last program advisory committee, all the pictures that I'll be showing are new. If they are similar to the previous ones, these are with the new reconstruction software with significantly higher statistics. And the reason why they are prepared, large part, was because we have made an effort to present both recent performance studies at the Quark Matter Conference in November. So we, of course, rely on our tracking and the particle identification, both in TPC and time of flight. Excellent efficiency. If we add the electromagnetic calorimeter, we also be able to separate electrons from hadrons. And with these capabilities, what we can do, first of all, just basically measure the particles, provide all kinds of distributions that we want. As I said, this is a recent calculation, central events, 9 GeV, pion, kaon spectra. As you can see, we should be able to provide excellent quality data on the very basic properties of the particles emitted in our system. That is, of course, not trivial, because that should allow us to basically extract full yields for all particle types. That should then enable us to determine temperature, biochemical potential, basically place us on the QCD phase diagram. Once we have this, the just normal tracks reconstructed, we can then proceed to do a more complicated analysis, like the reconstruction of hyperons. And again, this, you have seen these pictures already many times, but as I stress, these are much higher statistics with the recent reconstruction software for basically all types of hyperons that we can measure with very significant signal to background ratio. And we can, with these statistics, not only just do reconstruction, but actually provide full PT spectra and rapidity spectra, which I'm not showing, and determine the efficiency of reconstruction of these particles, which actually, even though it's slow, it's actually going basically almost to zero PT, which should allow us to extract the yields with a minimal systematic uncertainty. Similar, we could reconstruct hadronic resonances without using the topological cuts like for hyperons, but still we can do it in PT bins and basically for all kinds of hyperonic resonances we can imagine. Hypernuclei, something very interesting, because the production of these hypernuclei is expected to be maximum in our energy range. Correlation measurements, elliptic, a directed flow versus PT versus rapidity for all kinds of identified particles, our detector is expected to provide excellent capabilities in this measurements. Similarly, we can do this not just for directly identified particles, but also for hyperons. And again, our performance studies tells us that our detector should be more than capable of providing this data. Our ECAL should provide us with excellent capabilities to also measure mesons through their decay into leptonic channels. And this should also allow us to do excellent dilepton spectra. Our energy range gives us an advantage in the signal-to-background ratio, and this dilepton measurements is actually very heavily developed right now by the Physics Working Group 4. All these results have either been already presented or are ready to be presented at major scientific conferences, so quark matter, strangers in quark matter, the upcoming winter workshop on nuclear dynamics, and we are also have been asked by the Scientific Council of the Joint Institute to prepare the so-called first physics in MPD document. We are working on this document, and we hope to actually present the first version of it in the coming Scientific Council at the second part of February. So in summary, I think I showed you the progress in all important parts of the MPD collaboration, and we hope for the commissioning expected for 2021 and the physics program soon after that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Adam. Any questions or comments? Peter.
Taking into account also the information we received in the previous two talks, when do you expect to have the start of the operation now? What is the new schedule?
I mean, what I can say is what MPD can do. What we really plan to do, I mean, what's really a critical point for us is the readiness of the MPD hall. This is, as you've seen, basically ready, so we really think this March 1st is realistic, and then we can start operations of MPD, of the construction of the detector. That means that this goal of commissioning of the detector 2021 is, I think, what we want to do as MPD. Once the detector is commissioned, we will immediately proceed to take data, even if it's with COSMICS. So from our point of view, we will start operation in 2021. And then I'm afraid that we do not have a control over where the beam will be available, and I'm not able to answer this question. But what I can say is that we will be ready for beam whenever it's available.
Any other comments or questions? Jens?
Just one comment. I'm very happy that this international collaboration has been built and is working and is making beautiful progress. Thank you.
Okay. So the thanks again, and then we move now to the presentation on the BMATEN project by Mikhail Kapishin.
Okay, I will present the status in progress in realization of the BMATEN project. So you know this project is a fixed target experiment in the extracted area of the nucleotron. The aim is to study nucleus-nucleus interactions, different nucleus up to gold with intensity up to 10 to 6 hertz and energy up to 4.5 GV per nucleon. So first of all, I can announce that the first draft of the BMATEN paper on physics results is in circulation in BMATEN collaboration. It's related to the studies of production of lambda hyperons in two energies at 4 and 4.5 GV per nucleon in carbon nucleus interactions at nucleotron. So we measured yields of lambda as a function of PT, rapidity, and also compared the results with the models and with the measurements at low energies. The result is not official yet, that's why I cannot show them, because it's in circulation inside the collaboration now. I will concentrate on the status of the development of production of the new components and detectors for heavy iron physics program. And this is the schematic view of the detector. And I will show the status of the beam detectors, tracking beam detectors, trigger detectors situated here, target area, central tracker, which consists of gem detectors and silicon tracking system, and also outer tracker, which we substitute. The old outer tracker will be substituted to a new based on cathode strip chambers. And time of flight system is in the full performance. And we also have a new hadron calorimeter as a ZDC, a zero degree calorimeter. So first of all, about the central tracker, gem part, you see here proposed mechanical setup to put these detectors around the beam pipe inside the analyzing magnet. So all the 14 detectors are produced. The upper part already used in the runs, in argon and krypton runs. The low part of the detectors produced at CERN with participation of our scientists and engineers, and now delivered to Dubna, and now they are under cosmic test to prove the performance. Here you see the production of the last GEM detector at CERN. Then we assume the central tracker for the start of the heavy iron program, consisting of 7 GEM stations and 3 forward silicon stations. This here is a view from above. This in the vertical projection, we see forward silicon detectors and GEM detectors, target area, trigger detectors around and behind the target. Here there are 3 forward silicon stations shown here, the holes for the beam and increased size when you go further along the beam direction. Here is a view. You see trigger detectors, multiplicity detectors in front of them. And this forward silicon detectors will consist of upper and lower part combined together around the beam pipe. Beam pipe will provide our vacuum inside the setup. And this type of detectors technology is proven, operated already in previous runs, and we are very confident that we can start with this detectors, but it only sustain intensity of the beam up to a few 10 to 5 hertz due to the capacity of the front-end electronics. Then at the next stage, as soon as silicon tracking system, which is developing in collaboration with CBM are ready, at least 2 stations, we can put them in between and check if we can reconstruct tracks, combine tracks from forward silicon station gems and here in STS, because this type of detectors have completely different readout system, electronics, and that's why it would be reasonable to use them in combination with our detectors to prove that everything is working. And then finally, when we see that system is operational and in good condition, then we go to the final setup with four STS station in front and then GEM stations with a new type of fast electronics. Crucial here is, of course, the electronics, front-end electronics, to cope with the intensities up to few 10 to 6 hertz. So this is our final setup, which I expect would be after 2022. And status of the STS production and development here, you see the, so they approved, improved the quality assurance, I would say procedure, to check the quality of the assembly. Up to now, they are not satisfied with the amount of not operational channels, and now they developed a new procedure how to assemble these lines and to get the final goal that not less than 3% of the channels are not operational. And then produce a ladder assembly device to produce ladders for CBM and BM-10 experiment. Now they're testing the accuracy of the sensor position. Then the third step is a technical design report released by the joint efforts of different institutions from GINER, Moscow State University, MIFI, Warsaw, and JSI, and it will be discussed at the BM-10 DAC meeting. Status of electronics, so these are front-end board, which developed by Moscow University, and it's a new version of board. Then GINER group played or tested different types of cables to deliver signal from front-end board to the GBTX emulator board, which transmit high frequency the data from the electronics from the electronics to the data acquisition. This is not radiation hard, that's why we need to put the stream of data beyond the radiation hard condition. So this type of port already developed, and now they are testing synchronization of this electronics chain. Now I go to the beam pipe. Beam pipe in front of the target already produced. You see it's already installed in the setup. It has many detector boxes where we plan to install silicon tracking detectors, trigger detectors, and profile meters to tune the beam to the target area. Here is the target area. And so you see we have a lot of, a number of detector boxes to install the beam detectors here. So beam pipe elements are already in Dubnik, as I said. Then important elements are, of course, beam detectors. They include silicon beam tracker, three stations here in front of the target. Design is done now in the production. Then silicon multiplicity detector in front of the our silicon for silicon detectors, also in the production stage, trigger detectors, barrel detector around the target, and target station, which provide us with in vacuum with the possibility to change interchange three types of targets and also empty target. And all this, all detectors should be ready by spring 2021. And here is the profile meter on a movable, with a movable insert to tune the beam, and then with possibility to remove it from the beam when stable operation is fixed or established. We also moved ahead with the production development of the vacuum beam pipe inside the BM-10 setup. You see here it's a carbon fiber beam pipe element. Moscow firm produced the first piece of this tube, which should it will consist of several pieces with interconnection here, flexible interconnection with low material budget. To give possibility or to provide curvature of the beam inside the magnetic field. Now this piece is delivered to Dubna, and plan is to make a vacuum test, mainly to see if these connectors can sustain vacuum. And another team from Resh Institute in Czech, they also constructed a prototype of the carbon beam pipe and tested it with radiation, with neutrons, fluxes, and see no deterioration. And then next plan is to test this with protons. And amount of radiation was estimated from simulation studies. Another development is in our outer tracker, we plan to substitute the existing drift chambers, which cannot cope with the high, with the heavy iron collisions, with the cathode strip chambers. One chamber was produced already and operational in the last argon and krypton runs, showed a reasonable performance. And now our team produced three other chambers of this size, around 1 meter to 1 meter, to put it in front and behind our time of flight system to 400. The second set of chambers is in front, should be installed in front of behind TOF 700 system, and they have a bigger size, about 2.2 meter to 1.5 meter. They are now on the stage of design the circuit printed boards and purchasing the panels for the production. We plan to produce these bigger chambers in 2021, and the smaller size chambers will be ready already in the middle of 2020. Then new hadron, forward hadron colorimeter produced by our colleagues from Troitsk. It consists of models developed for MPD and CBM and combined in this way. It will be a beam hole, a hole for the beam. You see here the detector already assembled on the movable platform. This here you see a hole for the beam. Assembled and installed in our beam attend setup, and now it's on, under the cosmic test. So the idea is to provide a hole for the beam, install inside the hole here behind the colorimeter a quartz photoscope to measure charge of the fragments which escape detection in the colorimeter, and then we have energy deposition in colorimeter, asymmetry of energy deposited in the central areas and outer layers, and this charge measured with photoscope to resolve central and peripheral interactions. Here's a table showing our plans and what was done before. So we plan to start in fall 2021 with krypton and xenon beams at rates about half megahertz intensity of the beam. And in this period, we will operate with our initial hybrid tracking system based on GEM detectors and forward silicon detectors. And then as soon as STS station show reliable performance, we go to the stage two, to the final stage with STS station and GEM detectors as a central tracker. Then we can increase the intensity and intensity at the beam and the trigger rate. So my last slide is the present status and next plans. First of all, we released the first draft of the BMATON paper on the physics results on production of lambda hyperons in carbon nucleus interactions, and TDR report on large aperture silicon tracking system is released and will be discussed at the next DAC meeting. We have progress in realization of hardware equipment and in the production of detector elements. So a full set of GEM detectors for central tracker is delivered to the BMTN. Then we have a good progress in the development of forward silicon detectors, silicon beam detectors. They are going according to our time plan. There's progress in the development of STS detectors in collaboration with CBM, and development of front-end and readout electronics for these rather complicated detectors. Then development production of cathode strip chambers for the outer tracker is progressing. We got elements, all the components of beam pipe in front of the target, and prototypes of carbon fiber beam pipe is under test for vacuum and radiation resistance. And finally, a new NPD CBM type of hadron FHCAL calorimeter installed into the BMTN setup. So thank you for attention.
Thank you, Michael. Are there any questions, Fuchan?
It's very nice to hear that your physics paper is coming out soon. You may be in a very good position to measure the global polarization of lambdas, and that could produce a very high-profile physics result.
I think it's possible when we have the full configuration, the setup with more azimuthal uniformity the detectors, and then, of course, we plan to do it. And practically, partially for this purpose, we also install beam detectors to measure the trajectory of the beam to better control the reaction planar.
So it will be several years down the road.
Yes, several years.
Okay.
We should
wait
for a new setup.
Hans?
Yeah, progress is progress. Great, but can you show slide 8, please? I'm happy that we see now finally a vacuum chamber design and vacuum chamber efforts. My big question is number 8.
The
number 8. You're 8 further back.
Back.
To the layout, final hybrid central tracker. Further back. Yeah, here.
Yes.
This one. Okay. So, any tracking chamber in a magnetic field needs a test of field on, field off, so that you can have straight lines of in your tracking system. You feel how the magnetic effects are affecting your tracking system. Now, we talked about that, but my question now to you is, you are covering in excitation function low energy beams to high energy beams, and even, as I said, magnetic field off. So the beam is going sometimes straight and then bent over. Now, are you curving this carbon fiber chamber with stress as you have the energy change, so it always goes through the beam pipe, or are you, if you switch off the magnetic field, then the beam hits somewhere the beam pipe?
Yes.
I think if that is the case, it's stupid. Sorry to say that clear. We all know how to run tracking chambers, tracking systems, how we change the energy, and if you do that, you are not fulfilling the task which these people who are doing the tracking analysis later need.
No, sorry.
Michael, that is...
The idea is to go for the same trajectory for different fields. We reduce the field, we reduce the energy and reduce the magnetic field. The resolution scales according to the magnetic field. So in the range what we plan to measure, if we reduce magnetic field by a factor of 2, momentum resolution deteriorates by a factor of 2, but it's still acceptable. Instead of 0.8%, we get 1.6%. I think it's still reasonable. For alignment of the detectors, we just put target here, switch off magnetic field, use low intensity beam, measure vertex. We don't measure the beam itself, but we measure products of interaction. And using these products, by reconstructing vertex, we can align all the detectors.
But
so there's a method how to do it.
Yeah, but you produce anywhere garbage, and it's hard for them
to... It's not the primary goal to use the detectors without the magnetic field. It's only to prove alignment, to prove the detector performance. Low intensity.
Then I can only tell you, if you separate the people, what we hear in Atlas and CMS, if you separate the people who built the thing from those who do the analysis, then you have exactly the damage you have here. They don't get the data to do their performance, their adjustment, and so on. So if they want to have clean data on the same field off to understand exactly the high precision of their tracking system. And they don't get that. I mean, this is...
As I said, we run at low intensity beam for this purpose. We don't need high intensity to adjust our detectors.
I think that the point of Hans is well taken. We have discussed this many times, and I think that maybe this is an issue to come again tomorrow at the DAC meeting. I think that the design should have the capability of having a straight beam that will not hit the beam pipe, even if you lower the intensity. I mean, lowering the intensity is a poor man's solution of the problem, I think. But okay, I think we should leave this for tomorrow.
I wanted to contribute to this discussion, okay, but let's discuss it tomorrow. I fully agree with Capuccin that in case of the straight lines, you could use a muon beam to put a damp and you don't need any intensity. You need just some amount of track, but let's postpone these discussions.
Okay. I have another question. We heard today from the previous speaker that there is a provision for having beams at the end of the second part of 2020. But you mentioned the first run in 2021. You are not planning to make use of these beams towards the end of this year?
But they will be not available, definitely.
Sorry?
Because first of all, we need a new, vacuumized, I would say, new tract or new vacuum channel from the nucleotron to our experiment. And it's only now in the project. And of course, for heavy ions, we cannot run with air elements at the vacuum beam pipe. Then the second one, what Agapov mentioned, is a new, we need new power station. So up to now, or presently, all the power supplies which provide current for the magnetic elements from nucleotron to our experiment, they disassembled. And now it's in stage of the signing the, or preparation of the contract to build the station. This is, once, according to estimate, could be only in the beginning of or in early spring of 2021. So as soon as beam are ready, we can test, make some technology, technical test in our setup, but we have no magnetic field. This is the problem. So I think our estimation when we can start autumn 2021 is realistic, optimistically realistic.
Any further questions for Michael? Yeah, Peter.
Several times we had presentation on this measurement with inverse kinematics, but you did not mention it now. So what is the status there? Is it close to publication or?
No, not this. They still struggle with the analysis, I would say there is some progress, but to the publication it's still a long way from my point of view.
Okay, then we thank Michael again. Okay, so now we have the report by our secretary, Alexander Cheplakov, that will present the upgrade project of the Atlas detector.
How are you?
Okay, dear colleagues, I will present GNR participation results of GNR participation in the Atlas upgrade project. This is the first part of a comprehensive review requested by the PAC at the previous meeting. And the second part concerning the physics results will be presented after the lunch. So ATLAS upgrade follows LHC upgrade. So this is the framework picture of LHC upgrade, which is performed in two phases, phase one, where we are right now, and then phase two. And we are now at the middle of the so-called long shutdown two, where the preparation for the first phase of the upgrade is in installation, commissioning, and so on. So run two was rather successful for LHC. We achieved the incident luminosity twice above the nominal. And at that moment we had about 40 additional pile-up events for each bunch crossing. So certainly further increase of luminosity will require upgrade of the detector. After the second phase of the LHC upgrade, we'll have something like seven times of nominal luminosity, and it will be additional challenge for the inner tracker. Here at the bottom, you can see two pictures presenting top anti-top collision with the additional 200 events which we expect at this stage of LHC running. The cost of the phase one project for LHC for ATLAS was about 33 million Swiss francs, with 0.3 million for Dubna, and it will be much more expensive for the phase two, 270 with 3.4 million for Jenner. The phase one project for ATLAS consisted of five major sub-projects. We have participated in the muon upgrade and in leaky target upgrade. I have to say that everything we put now in our detector will be used until the end of this experiment. So we can say that this phase one just formed the foundation for the phase two upgrades. Let me start with the muon spectrometer. The upgrade of muon spectrometer is a replacement of two small wheels located at the end, at the edge of barrel part of the ATLAS. This new small wheel will consist of micromega chamber and thin gap chamber with the small strips. And so this is the scheme of this wedge. there are five institutions, five clusters working on in these projects: GNR, Saclea, Thessaloniki from Greece, Italian cluster NFN, and German cluster. Our obligation is to produce 64 micromega read out plates and plus four spares, and assemble 32 quadruplets. We work together with Thessaloniki. They are making drift chambers, and we assemble all together and transport RAD module to the to CERN. I have to say this is a new technology, and we are very happy that we brought this technology to GNR. And there was a special workshop built at Gelepo laboratory, and we also managed to build a smaller workshop, a second one, to produce a micromega chamber of smaller sizes for domestic experiment and other purposes. This slide shows you several photographs showing various stages of the micromega chamber production until the end, where we have a cosmic stand for cosmic tests. During all these stages, the chambers are going through the quality control. And for the first 20 produced chambers, we have result of the planarity tests, of gas leakage, everything is okay. And by the end of 2020, we produced, 2019, sorry, 54 micromegas readout panels of 64 in total, and 14 quadruplets. In mid-November last year, at CERN, we have assembled the first double-side wedge of large sector together with the Saclay team. So the big part is our obligation. So this was done in Dubna, and this part was done in Saclay. And as Iskak asked me to be 100% open. I put here the extract from the internal review of ATLAS panel, which was established to review the new Smallville project and to find some risks, some bottlenecks, and to give recommendations, and also to estimate what is the what is the possible date of the installation of this stuff. So as for Micromegas, so this report consisted of several parts. For Micromegas, there were several issues, and mostly caused, the first one was 1 year delay caused by bad quality of the initial raw materials. The PCB was out of any requirements, but now they are okay. But then some high voltage issues appeared because of high sizes of these modules now, and this stuff is also, as well as cleanness, was solved by the collaboration. The final high voltage problem was solved by introducing age passivation method, and it was deployed in all production sites to catch up with the rate of for the smaller segment of the large wedge, which is the responsibility of Saclair. They started to build a second construction line, so it will be okay. Now, as for thin gap chambers, the panel advised to have more technical personnel during the assembly. Electronics is going well, but there is some delay, which is acceptable. These numbers, which characterize the status of the detector, they are renewed since the November when this report was produced. Now we have already 8 of 8 small double wedges, and we have 3 of 8 large double wedges ready for installation or installation of electronics or installation on the wheel. STGC, we have 13 of 16 ready and 3 of 16 for the large wedges. The conclusion of the panel was that we have a significant progress in all aspects of production, and the new Smallville community, they acquired a critical experience in wedge assembly and installation and testing of modules with the front-end electronics. The dates, the proposed dates for the installation is the fall 2020, but the contingency of 3 to 4 months is required. On 5th of December is the first small sector was mounted on the structure, support structure of the new small wheel. It was like a Christmas gift, was well decorated before the Christmas. And as for today, we have, I'm talking about the GNR obligation, we have assembled two large sectors. They are ready for installation of electronics, and the third one is now is been assembled at CERN. That's all for the muon spectrometer. Now I'm coming to the colorimetry. There was a serious motivation for upgrade of the colorimeter because of increase of luminosity, but also we had in our colorimeter, we had much finer granularity. For the moment, we have used only one trigger tower for only one trigger tower of big size, and we plan to go from one trigger to 10 so-called supercells. With this supercells, we will manage to reconstruct a kind of shape of the shower, and using various discriminators shown here, we will be managed to distinguish between electromagnetic and hadronic shower. And even at the level one trigger, we could well reproduce the peak of from Z to E plus E minus. The blue one is supercells, new approach, and the red one is what we have with only one trigger. So increase of interformation requires increase of requires upgrade of trigger electronics, and Dubna is involved in this from the beginning. In particular, we are doing some production for the so-called liquid argon trigger digitizer board. And we have designed a base plane for the new trigger electronics, and also now we are doing some radiation tests and development of different elements of this module. In particular, the plate is done and prepared for testing high-frequency operational amplifier. Linearity of those amplifiers quite well. Now this board will go to the ABR2 reactor to be radiated. Also, two signal flow for the data and for the control and monitoring of trigger electronics these two flows use optical fibers, and we plan to, and we already do this work for phase two. This all, as I mentioned already, will be useful for the phase two upgrade. And for the optical fibers, we produced several for the phase one electronics, and we will continue because of increase of further increase of luminosity. We will continue production and testing of these fibers. An example shown here, this is what we have done this year. We irradiated the pigtails, optical pigtails, and they showed various some issues. We have to continue the study. What is interesting, despite of serious damages, the optical characteristic shown here did not change too much. So with the spectrum reflectometry, we measured attenuation of the signal in the fibers. Another kind of activity within the colorimeter project was the replacement of so-called MBTS, minimum bias trigger scintillator, which are located at the edge of the barrel part of the detector. Our people are involved in this in actual replacement. And what will be replaced, the old scintillator plates will be replaced with a new one, which are longer and they covered higher ETA range. We have tested these modules in terms of attenuation of the signals. So 11% attenuation is quite acceptable, but also this team continued to search for a better scintillator, and this is an example of one of the tests we performed for at IBR2, so-called green and blue scintillator we compared together. The phase two will be a much more serious project for ATLAS, so we will replace completely the inner detector, which is located at the central part of the detector. Also, perhaps a new timing, high granularity timing detector will be installed at the area where this scintillator I just showed you. So new muon chambers will be put to improve acceptance of the muon detector, but also TDAC will be completely new, and we will replace electronic for the colorimeter and for the muon system. It was a long road to have this project ready. So it started in 2012 with a letter of intent. Now we have six TDRs ready. And this work is continuing to be reviewed within ATLAS. The slide down on the bottom shows how the resources in the project will be shared between various subsystems. The major part, 44%, will be taken by the new full silicon inner detector, 17% by liquid argon and TDAC and so on. So GNR was among the first institutions which have fixed their obligation and signed the corresponding MOU. And I put here this part where Dubna is involved. So TDAC is many other institutions in ATLAS, we will just participate in procurement of servers, computers, and various components of the system. In liquid argon, as I said, we will continue our work on trigger electronics for the hadronic and cap, but also it's not shown here. A big part of our work will be production and testing of optical pigtails together with Lebedev Institute from Moscow, with significant contribution from the grant of Ministry of Science and Education of Russia. For muon system, our team will participate in production of RPC chamber for gas system and power distribution design. As I said, high granularity timing detector is also in our interest, area of our interest, but they are not ready with the TDR. Hopefully it will be ready by summertime, and then we'll negotiate what we'll do on this project. At the end of December, there was an open council at CERN where four LHC experiments proposed, make their proposal for extension of launch shutdown 2, extension of technical design, technical stops at the end of the year, and perhaps a delay of launch shutdown 3. And so all these proposals you can see here, and that decision were taken to first to extend round 3 by 1 year, to extend the launch shutdown 2 by 2 months, and in March we have to review what is going on with the new Smallville project. Perhaps there will be additional delay of 6 weeks. As for the energy, so depends on the result of the magnet training. There could be 13.5 or the same energy as we had before. So the estimate of the integral luminosity depends on various scenarios, various schedule which will be adopted. It will be from 180 to 260 inverse centibar. So because of these uncertainties, we didn't put in our project what expenses will be for the production, for procurement, and so on. So what you can see here is what we are going to spend on R&D for calorimetry and for completion of the new Smallville project and R&D for RPC chambers. So the list of participants is shown here. We have in total 53 person involved in upgrade project with 34 FTE. If you combine these numbers with what with our colleagues doing analysis in physics, the final for Atlas team in GNR will be 33 FTE provided by 84 people. And so these people are asking you to approve our project until 2023 to be in time with what is already adopted for the physics group. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Christian?
Roughly, what is the fraction of Atlas upgrade that GNR is involved?
Atlas, what Atlas had done, we estimated the total cost of the project, and then it was shared between the institution in proportional to the number of authors, and so we are about 1% or so. So it's 3.4 as it said at the beginning.
Further comments or questions? Yeah, Luciano.
Maybe I just would like to make a comment on the overall scope of the participation of GNR in the Atlas upgrades. I think it is very prominent, both for the phase one and phase two. Now, the phase one, in particular, the Smallville Muon project, I mean, as you have outlined, is on the critical path. A review will be of the schedule will take place this June. But according to what you have shown, this is quite promising that this will be part of the installations during LS2. And I think this is quite quite good news.
Thank you.
Okay, so this upgrade project has been reviewed by two internal referees, which are quite positive, and from our pack it was reviewed by Hans, so I will ask Hans not to read the full the full report, but just to give here his highlights.
So, thank you very much. So, let me start. If I would be a collaboration member or a leader of the Atlas collaboration, I would eagerly always want to have GNR as member and producing lots of material. I come to that. My referee report is not needed because the director has already signed the MOU that GNR is participating. So why should I referee? This is absurd. Okay? So My personal feeling is, yes, Jenner should be in ATLAS and continue, but, and this is now my point. So I concur with my fellows that it's good to work in ATLAS. However, there was a time when CERN collaborations appreciated strongly the cheap but well-trained labor from Dubna, and they were happy to get many instruments and detector parts built in and around Dubna. These days should be over today, because it was cheap labor. And if I see today that you split your ATLAS group again in two, we discussed that previously, and you are still splitting it, so either the director accepted that and rejected our criticism, which was repeated in the Scientific Council, you repeated in your talk. I still think if you have these people who do the analysis, who don't know much about your beautiful contribution to the detectors and the fine details, what you have to have in your mind, then you have the separation of computing screen people and other experimentalists. I'm against that, but if you do so and your director supports that, I deplore that. Then I see you have done, you write in your proposal, within the upgrade project for muon spectrometry, we will continue intensive mass production of the micromegas chambers and quadruplets assembly for the project. So Jinnah became the third research center in the world after CERN and Saclay that possesses the full technical chain. I know CEA, I myself did not work on micromegas. We failed to have micromegas in ALICE, but you are participating in the mass production. And mass production is now my question. Is CERN checking what they want to be famous for?
For you mean JNR?
JNR, yeah. Is JNR famous for mass production, or is JNR famous for scientific contribution? And the scientific contribution, I bring this up together, if you have 140 active ATLAS members, and 36 are only ATLAS authors, that's how you are listed in the website of ATLAS, and 15 PhD students. You have a ratio of members to authors of 4-1, close to 4-1. All the other groups, be it IHEP, be it Munich, they have twice as many active members to authors. And an author is somebody who has done something to the physics, to the analysis. So I know you have to pay, but I think Jinnah should focus that they get the recognition for the contribution to the experiment. We keep saying that since several years. And or you go like Butker, you have a production line, and then these engineers who don't need publications, and you are the physicists who control these engineers, but together you do this. And that's how CERA is doing it. And CERA is in CERN. They have hired workers for building the mass production, and you have motivated technicians. So my point is, Jinnah does a fantastic job in the mass production of designs which were done outside. You may, hopefully, I heard from Naumov that you have improved some of these things while you are setting up the line. But to a future, you should focus on that you contribute and get the physics rewards out of that in a more balanced way.
Okay. Hans, you're done?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. I will let Alex to respond to those things, or?
Okay, so as I remember, the first point was about the mass production. So mass production, in my terms, in my words, I would say, so we have, once we want to build a big detector, we produce a so-called module zero, minus one or so. Then when everything is okay, we go to the mass production, so we just produce the rest of modules which we need for the big detector. In that sense, it's not a massive or big or you know, great production, but it's a mess in terms of complete the subsystem, that's it. So as I said, this mass production is going on also in other institutions, and that's the word in which we use in Atlas. Is not. Okay, then as for synergy of the hardware people and doing physics analysis, I completely agree. We have to merge, and we try to do it. In Atlas, we introduced so-called institutional commitments. So what institute is going to do in supporting detect and in doing analysis, and we will try in at least the young people we would like to involve also in the hardware work. So at the beginning, before they start to use all good of being Atlas also, they have to pass through the qualification stage for 1 year, and it's a good chance for them to build something by their hand and to understand how detector works. I agree. As for your last point, this 140 active people in Atlas, this number is taken from the CERN database. And before you, if somebody is coming to CERN to do some work, this person have to go to the user office to fill the paper, to pass through the whole bureaucracy. And for those who are coming occasionally for CERN, just for our convenience, to avoid all this paperwork, we leave them as an active member. So they are not, and this the people which I put in the last slide of my presentation, these are kind of background. So we need them from time to time. They are remaining in as active member in the, according to CERN database, but it's not a representative value. What is representative is this 84 people. They are really active member of the Atlas. And in this, this ratio is not worse than you showed in your report, I think.
But one question back to you on your reply. If CEOA is building 2,000 square meter or 200 square meters of micromegas, and you build 200 square meters of micromegas, I know the costing CEOA is doing. But you got only 3.6 or something million credited in the upgrade of Atlas, right?
For the phase two, yes.
Yeah.
Not for phase one.
Yeah, but take some number. You got so many millions credited. Is that equivalent to the credit CEOA is getting for producing the same number of detectors? Have you checked that?
Well, these numbers appeared as produced by expert people to estimate the cost. Yeah.
Yeah.
So as for TDAC, we will just buy some equipment. Yeah. For liquid argon, we'll not produce electronics because it's a bit hard for us. We don't have an expert, and in some cases, it's there are some sanctions. We can do it, you know. For colorimetry, we will do R&D. But for there is a big part in this in the production. We will produce a lot of optical fibers. We'll test them, and we'll assemble and so on. So this part will be do together with Lebedev Institute, as I said. But it's maybe one-fifth of the whole amount of money.
So please compare that with how they are credited. I think Dubna is not getting its share.
Okay. concerning the issue of the two groups, I think that this is an issue that we need to discuss maybe tomorrow with the management to see what is their attitude at this respect. And there are though objective reasons for the current thing is that the other two experiments are not ready to present their upgrade project. So it's only ATLAS that is ready to do that. And we could have this incorporated in the presentation that we will hear later from the physics analysis, but that appeared to be too long, so it was again split. But maybe this is an issue that we need to discuss with management tomorrow morning. Okay, thank you very much, Alexander. And then we move on. Now to the revised proposal on the NA64 experiment by Dmitry Pechechonov.
Hello, everybody. The aim of my talk is a response on the PEC recommendation, but I also plan to tell you about new results of our experiment. It will be about light dark matter results, news about beryllium anomaly. Probably I skip our results on axion-like particles, and because it is still under work, and just mentioned shortly our proposal for investigation with muon beam for the second generation. And after that, I will remind you about contribution of our group and participation in the experiment, and give an answer of the PAC PEC recommendations. So, the experiment. Oops. Yeah. First of all, I want to show you highlights of our experiments. 18th of January, it was highlighted by Vice Director General of CERN, Professor Elson. He said that from the wide variety of fixed target experiment, he chose NA62 and NA64 as the most indicative in terms of the potential for discovering new physics at SPS. Analysis of data collected during 2016 and 2018 with electrons allowed us to achieve a record sensitivity for the region of light dark matter parameters, as well as significantly advance in the search of other new weakly interacting particles. It is also was highlighted by DG Fabiola Gianotti, 29th of January, and she marked this experiment as most promising avenue for search of new physics in ways that are complementary to high energy colliders. Experiment has been proposed for the search of dark sector physics in 2014 and approved in 2 years with plan to accumulate 5 to 10 to 12 or 10 to 13 event of the electrons on the target after long shutdown too. Right now it is about 60 participants from Germany, Greece, Chile, Russia, Switzerland, United Kingdom, United States, CERN and GNR. Our results. We finished analysis of data obtained during first data taken runs. And for like light dark matter, we obtained almost 3 to 10 to 11 electrons on the target. And here you can see, our limits set to the dark photon parameters, and at this plot our limits on the light dark matter. You see, we already reach restriction from slug and another experiment like LSND and MBN experiment. When we reach planet statistics 5 to 10 to 12, we will be able almost cover all this region with this prediction for light dark matter, including Majorana type and the Pseudo-Dirac type of the light dark matter. It was published and highlighted by editor in Physics Review Letter. Our second mode is visible mode of the decay when we are looking for E plus E minus pair after the decay of the particle. And now the primary goal is search for the hypothetical 17th MeV X boson, which could be an explanation of the beryllium anomaly. Right now we achieved 8.4 to 10 to the 10 events, and here you can see the range we covered by our data and our exclusion region, and the rest. We plan to obtain few to 10 to the 12 electrons on the target, and with these statistics we will be able to cover all this range up to 1.4 to 10 to the 3. This result also was published in Physics Review D just 1 month ago. Here you can see the sketch of our spectrometer, which we used for this analysis in 2017, 2018. And we plan to upgrade this spectrometer a lot, especially the spectrometer part. We use the magnet and the precise low-budget tracker for the E plus E minus pair mass reconstruction for the separation of two tracks. And here you can see our estimation made with Monte Carlo for the statistics which we need to obtain to obtain these limits on the Kaplan parameter. In 11 days, we cover this region, and for covering all possible region of this hypothetical boson, we need about 10 months of data taking. Our plans for 2021. Two runs has been already approved for us. 2 weeks ran in the spring, just for test of our spectrometer, and data taking run 6 weeks. We still have two scenarios for this run, or it will be separated in two parts, half for the light dark matter search and another part for this hypothetical X boson, or we spent all 6 weeks for investigation of visible mode for and focus for beryllium anomaly. Also SPSC, which before recommends our test run with a muon at the beginning of 2022, preliminary approved 2 weeks pilot run for us at the beginning of 2021. And now we are expecting an approval of research board. Our plan for the next data taking period at CERN, we are going to obtain 5 to 10 to 12 electrons on the target for the light dark matter search, few 10 to 12 for beryllium anomaly, and for that we will need an upgrade of our spectrometer, especially for the visible mode detector. Also, we are preparing our spectrometer for the investigation with the muon beam. The request for the gene group is to prepare 7 new double layer straw tube planes with the size 120 to 60 centimeters. We are doing this job together with our colleagues from Belarusia. They are responsible for the electronics. Our current responsibility is manufacturing and support straw drift chamber, which are already produced. Here you see 2 millimeter chamber, 6 millimeter chambers, and our detectors during data taking at the last run. We also support and development software for these detectors, participate in data analysis, and particularly we made a lot of efforts for the last data analysis for like light dark matter for invisible mode. And we are continuing research and development for possibility to use 2 millimeter straw tube for double track separation in a visible mode. Our results on the straw tube detector also was published this autumn. Here our request for the money, you have seen it in 51st session. I just repeat you the plot, nothing changed. The summary of the 51st section, junior team successfully fulfilled obligation on the straw detector, participation on online monitoring, DEQ support and electronics. We contribute to analysis and plan to expand this participation. And we are ready to fulfill new obligation on the new straw tube detectors. And we attract new participants from JNR countries. Also, an information about the approval of our runs with electrons and muons are presented. And here you see the photos of new experimental zone on electron beam. Now we have permanent zone, and CERN already spent 500 kilo Swiss francs for the modernization of this area. Now, a recommendation of the joint session and 51st session. PAC paid our attention of the difference between the relative number of full-time equivalent and number of participant, as well as the low numbers of young researchers in our team, and asked us about our plans for obtaining PhD theses of our young researchers. So the same was in the 51st session. So historically, for 2 years, but historically, our team split it to 3 subgroups. First, people who are doing detector methodists. And definitely, these people are participating in a number of projects. Nevertheless, even in this team, we have few experts who spent a lot of time with accent of our spectrometer. It is detector expert Viktor Lisan, technician Igor Zhukov, and high-level expert Viktor Kramarenko. Also, we have new participant here, Evgeny Martovitsky. Theory, Viktor Matveyev was one of the person who should suggest this project, and he still participating in this. Nikolai Krasnikov, our collaborator from INR, spent half of time in JNR, and he's fully involved in our project. Analysis and Monte Carlo simulation. It was our weak point, but last 2 years we improved our participation on this field. Peter Volkov made a lot for background estimation, tracking with our chamber, and analysis with invisible mode. Also, 3 young researchers join us. One is just a student, last year student, Ekaterina Mosolova from St. Petersburg. Elina Kasyanova just finished his education in university, join us, and Ruslan Audianov, quite experienced researcher, worked for the COMPASS and now join us for his own reason. It's more interesting for him to join this this problematic. Also, I want to mark here our contribution to the DEQ. This guy with only 20% participation covering 100% of DEQ of our experiment, so it is very important. And our participation in management, I highlight that Nikolai Krasnikov is responsible for the theory in our experiment. So, a few more words about our young researchers. Right now we have 7 persons, including Alexander Solin from Belarus. 4 of them are young, and almost all of them potentially may obtain thesis with an A64 experiment. Also, we have a request for another young researcher from our laboratory. Last year, we participated in conference and made a report at the NEC 2019 about electronics, about Astro Tracker. We prepared the poster for this session of PAC by our young researcher, and we published our success with straw chamber preparation for this experiment in PEPANLETE. So the summary, full-time equivalent number of participants. We try to take into account of PAC recommendation and working on the improvement on situation. And we hope that young researcher, which already joined us, will be very active, and we expect new researchers. Our plans with analysis is to continue analysis of obtained data and the Monte Carlo simulation preparation of new experiment with electrons and muons. And we are ready to fulfill obligations with 6 millimeter chamber, these 7 planes, and we still have ambitions to make 2 millimeter straw chamber able for 2-track separation for visible mode. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. I think we appreciate your efforts to address the questions of the last PAC meeting, and I'm opening now this for questions or comments. No questions, no comments. So our referee for this revised version was Peter Hristov, so I will give him the floor to present his summary now.
So if you go one slide back, this is basically also what I have put in my review. It's the third one in a row, so if I have to do it once again, I will become an expert that can join your experiment. But hopefully this time you addressed most of the questions, actually all of the things that were mentioned in the PAC materials and in our discussion. So going through the three on the slide, yes, indeed, the participation was improved from the initial version of the document. So now it is 4.7 full-time equivalents and 13 participants. And 14
it went
now.
Up. It went up from 4.7 to 7.5.
Yes, so it was initially what is there, 4.7 and 13 to 7.5 and 14 or 16, depends how we count. Very good success with the new researchers. You had 3 initially, now we have 6, and 1 more possibly coming, so this is very good. You started working on the analysis, although I did not see a publication on this. Hopefully this is coming. In my opinion, you have addressed in adequate way the recommendations of the previous session of the Program Advisory Committee. So to make it short, I suggest that we approve the updated version of NA64 project.
Thank you very much, Peter. So we thank the speaker again. And I think that we are going to break for lunch now. And we will, so the talk that was foreseen to be now on the FASA revised proposal will be the first thing that we do after lunch at 2:30. So we reconvene at 2:30. Bon appétit.